It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Preliminary data released by the state health department finds that the number of Wisconsin babies born with syphilis last year is more than 15 times the amount born with the disease in 2019.
Congenital syphilis can be life-threatening to fetuses and newborns. It occurs when the sexually transmitted disease passes to babies during pregnancy.
This comes as syphilis rates in Wisconsin and nationwide have risen sharply in recent years. Data from the state health department finds that cases of syphilis more than tripled from 2019 to 2022. Cases dipped slightly in 2023, but infections remain high.
To learn more about the rise in this sexually transmitted disease and what's being done to contain the spread, we reached out to Craig Berger, Syphilis Surveillance Coordinator at the State Department of Health Services, and Dr. Allison Linton, who specializes in obstetrics and gynecology. She's an associate professor at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. Dr. Linton finds that the rise in syphilis rates in our state is likely due to a combination of factors.
I'm not sure any of us fully know the full answer. It's likely multifactorial. It definitely seems that the COVID-19 pandemic played a role. So if you look at rates of syphilis in particular since 2019, you've seen a large increase. And so whether that could be partly due to people not having access to routine STI testing during the COVID-19 pandemic, or being a little bit more wary to see their healthcare provider, I think that there's probably a lot of different reasons. The other reason why syphilis is somewhat unique, because syphilis can have symptoms initially, but after those symptoms go away, someone can still be infected and be able to pass the infection to other people. So because of that, there are some people that may have had an infection or symptoms initially, and then they went away and they don't realize that they are still infected. So as those asymptomatic infections continue to exist, you can start infecting more and more people over time.
And Craig, how does the rate of syphilis cases compare to the spread of other STIs like gonorrhea or like chlamydia?
So the gonorrhea and chlamydia have actually been mostly on the decrease. We did see a slight bump up over the COVID pandemic. However, syphilis has been on an upward projection up until 2022, when we had our highest count of 1,916 cases. In 2024, however, and this I'm talking adult or acquired syphilis, we had in 2024, we had 1,419. So I think we're over that hump and we're working our way down.
And now the State Health Department is looking at this preliminary data from early 2024 showing that the rate of babies born with syphilis passed during pregnancy, congenital syphilis as it's called, was nearly 15 times higher last year than in 2019. What is behind that uptick?
I think a lot of it was from early testing. Again, I don't want to blame everything on the pandemic, but as the doctor alluded to earlier, a lot of our community partners, Vivint, Planned Parenthood, other community partners that do testing for STIs were shut down, focused on other things during the COVID pandemic. And I think we fell behind and we're kind of playing catch up right now.
Dr. Linton, are there birthing complications for the mother or the newborn with congenital syphilis?
Yeah, absolutely. Congenital syphilis is a very severe disease and something that we certainly want to detect and be able to treat, because I do want to emphasize syphilis is treatable. It is curable. We can oftentimes treat it with just a series of antibiotics. But unfortunately, if it's left untreated, adults can progress in symptoms. They can develop, long-term symptoms where they can have neurological problems, damage to various systems of their body. From a congenital perspective, when that bacteria passes through the placenta, it leads to very high rates of stillbirth. So about 50% of pregnancies can end in stillbirth. And then even when those babies are born, you can see complications such as bone issues, blindness in a newborn, rashes, a variety of different conditions. So definitely something that we want to detect and be able to treat as soon as possible.
Are you able to treat the pregnant person once you learn that there is congenital syphilis?
Absolutely. Yes. So, and that's one of the big things, like Craig was saying, we're really trying to focus on making sure that we can bring these numbers down. And one of the ways that we're doing so is changing our routine ways of screening in pregnancy. So historically, there were recommendations that we only screened pregnant people that are at higher risk. Now those recommendations have changed dramatically to recommend that all pregnant people are not only screened, but screened three times during pregnancy. So screened at their initial prenatal visit, one time later in the second to early third trimester, and then once again at the time of delivery.
You alluded to this earlier here that, you know, syphilis has also been called the great imitator due to the wide range of symptoms for this particular STI. Is misdiagnosis still an issue?
You know, syphilis, at least primary and secondary syphilis, which are usually when people have initial symptoms, are somewhat classic as long as you're seeing a physician or, you know, seeking healthcare. I think what's tricky about it is, again, because sometimes these symptoms can be very mild or even unrecognizable for some patients, some people don't realize that there's something that needs to be tested and they wait. And a lot of times the symptoms will go away on their own. But like I mentioned, those symptoms going away does not mean that the infection is still not present, and they can lead into this latent phase where the infection is still within their body. They can still transmit it to others, including during pregnancy, but they no longer are feeling the symptoms of it and might not realize that anything's wrong.
Dr. Linton, going back to newborns with an STI, what are those first months like if they survive?
So generally for congenital syphilis, usually symptoms will start to develop within the first couple of months of life. So usually in the first 3 months, and for the vast majority of cases, you'll see something within the first 2 years of age. So we're watching babies really closely, infants really closely after delivery. Again, the more information we have, the better. So if we are finding out earlier in pregnancy or even at the time of delivery, that's something that we can then work with our pediatric colleagues to make sure that that baby is not only being monitored, but treated for any signs and symptoms that they are having. But again, it's one of those things that the more information that we can have, the earlier, the better. And that's where really routine screening is so key. Every single person three times in pregnancy is the recommendation because of these numbers that we're seeing.
So, Craig, what do you focus on in your work as syphilis surveillance coordinator? What does that entail?
So part of my job as a syphilis surveillance coordinator is my side job is a disease intervention specialist, which means basically when somebody has positive labs for syphilis, we'll reach out to the provider, make sure that they ran the correct laboratories that need to be ran, because it is a pretty complicated algorithm. And so we make sure that, you know, and doctors haven't seen a lot of syphilis previous to 2020. So we make sure that everything's being run correctly, and then we offer, you know, we tell them what they should be treated with. There's only two things that are available for treatment for syphilis in Wisconsin. That's penicillin or doxycycline. We always prefer penicillin. And then what we do is we talk to the patients and make sure they know what they're going to go through, what the treatment is, and what, you know, answer any questions they might have. And then we also talk to them about their partners, and we actually go out there and we will find their partners and notify them confidentially that they need to be tested and treated as well. So we do a lot of talking. We try to remove a lot of shame and stigma associated with STIs. And, you know, even if, you know, a lot of times we'll talk to people who have multiple morbidities, multiple diagnoses at the time, including gonorrhea, chlamydia, and HIV. And we'll actually talk them into getting them into care, finding the right care for them that works for them. But our main job is, I guess, to put ourselves out of a job by locating patient zero and actually making sure that we're able to stop the spread of the disease. One of the things that we can celebrate is that in 2024, even though we did have 31 preliminary numbers for congenital syphilis, due to intervention, we were able to stop 86 congenital syphilis cases from occurring because of the intervention that we do here.
You know, nearly a year ago, Craig, the Food and Drug Administration approved a rapid at-home test for syphilis. Has that helped lower barriers for detecting syphilis?
It can in some instances. The rapid tests detect antibodies so that once somebody has had syphilis, they will have antibodies in their system for life. It doesn't mean that they have syphilis. It's just that those antibodies there that were produced during their infection will go with them for life. So we need the combination of tests to really find out whether or not there's going to be a reinfection. But for the quick screen, I think it's been very good.
Dr. Linton, Craig mentioned the antibiotic doxycycline, that it could be effective in reducing the likelihood of getting bacterial STIs like syphilis. What do you see there?
So there's the treatment after someone's infected. There also are, new treatments where you can actually use something like doxycycline ahead of time. So for post-exposure prophylaxis, before you've actually been diagnosed with a infection, using a series of antibiotics to try to prevent the infection from truly taking hold in your body. So there's a lot of really wonderful work happening in the field of STIs right now. It all just comes back to the idea of making sure that patients are, one, aware, and that people are aware of symptoms, also aware of the importance of routine screening. So even if you don't have symptoms, making sure that you're getting those tests, that you're having those conversations, not only with your physician, but also with your partner. Like Craig was saying, a lot of this is about having open conversations with partners, making sure that you're assessing your personal risk as well as the risk of those around you, to keep both you and them safe.
But do you find that there might be a reluctance for a patient to talk with you about an STI, or that do you feel there are stigmas with STIs?
Yeah, unfortunately, yeah, there's definitely still stigmas around STIs. The more we can work on this as a community, the better we can hopefully get those numbers down in syphilis to where they were before. As you mentioned, they were almost eradicated. The numbers were very low. And I think that's part of what we're seeing now, because it was an infection that we weren't seeing as frequently. Like Craig said, there are a lot of physicians that aren't used to seeing syphilis. We weren't routinely screening because we didn't think that the risk was high. So the more conversations that we can have, the more that everybody can be up to date with what we are seeing in today's day and what we need to be looking out for, my goal is that not only can we decrease the stigma, but ultimately decrease the burden on society and on patients' health as well.
We're talking about syphilis and prevention in Wisconsin with Dr. Allison Linton and Craig Berger. Dr. Linton is an OBGYN and associate professor at Froedtert and Medical College of Wisconsin. Craig Berger is the syphilis surveillance coordinator at the State Department of Health Services. Who might be most at risk for contracting syphilis?
We have a lot of priority populations that we look towards. I can say that breaking down information from 2023, 2024 isn't complete yet, so this is from 2023. But by race, Black people in Wisconsin only have 6% of the population overall, but yet they had 51% of the disease burden. Vice versa, white people had 80% of the population and 28% of the disease burden. So again, there is a lot of system problems that exist that need to be overcame, not to mention just folks who are on and underinsured needing these symptoms or these systems to help them navigate them.
Dr. Linton, do you have insights on the risk of getting syphilis and how you have these conversations with your patients?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, again, one of the things that I thought was really interesting in some of the 2023 data was when we are diagnosing people with syphilis, over half of the cases seem to be in this latent phase. So where their initial symptoms had already resolved, and then they were potentially unaware that anything was wrong because they weren't having any symptoms. So I would just go back to that idea. We need to get back to a point where routine screening and routine conversations, like Craig was mentioning, are the norm. Making sure that this is not stigmatized. This is not something that we talk about behind closed doors and in hushed tones. This is healthcare. This is routine, taking care of your body and taking care of your community and your families as well.
Why did efforts to eradicate the disease fail in the 90s?
I think it's hard to say. You know, a lot of these sort of silent, occasionally, you know, again, sometimes people will have symptoms initially, but if symptoms then disappear, just like any other disease where you are not having, or any other infection where you're not having outward signs, it can spread very quickly. And I think one of the things that is interesting, if I look back to my training, it was very common when people asked for STI screening, we would routinely do gonorrhea and chlamydia. We would not necessarily do syphilis because at the time, those numbers were lower. But that is going to take a whole re-education of not only the community to be aware of what symptoms and signs to be looking out for, but also the medical community for what we should be talking about, what we should be offering as routine screening. So I think if any of these sort of epidemics or, you know, changes in numbers over time, if you look at the epidemiology of a lot of infectious diseases, there's a variety of factors that can play a role for why you'll see ebbs and flows. But I think it all comes back to the same idea of increasing awareness, increasing the normalcy of being tested and screened, even when you aren't having symptoms. And again, trying to get the best data that we have to make sure that everyone can be as informed as possible.
Are there myths about syphilis that you have to demystify?
Yeah, I think, you know, similar to what Craig was saying, I think all STIs just have a lot of shame and a lot of misconceptions. I think one of the things that I always try to emphasize specifically about these bacterial infections is that they are treatable. It's not to say that they can't have secondary, complications, specifically, you know, gonorrhea and chlamydia. Certainly we see impact on reproductive health systems. It can lead to higher rates of infertility. But syphilis, you know, it's one of those infections that as long as we can diagnose it and we can treat it, people go on and have completely normal lives, right? This is not something that is a lifelong disease. So I think one of the things is, again, like Craig was saying, just emphasizing that this is not something to be ashamed of. This is something to help us get treated, or we can help you get treated and then help us identify other people that may be at risk. I think the biggest thing that I sort of see from the syphilis symptoms in particular, you know, you had asked earlier, sort of a great mimicker there. The symptoms that people may have in primary syphilis, a chancre, a sore, most commonly on the genital area, unlike something like a herpes infection, it is usually non-painful. So I've had patients come before thinking that this was just, from a friction or a rug burn. I've heard people describe it as a rug burn before. So again, it might just not be something that they recognize as an issue. In secondary syphilis, sometimes it's a rash that people might have. So again, it's just all about having those conversations, making sure that people are aware and that the goal is to help all of us help each other to decrease these numbers.
Dr. Linton, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And Craig, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
No, thank you.
And that is Craig Berger, the Syphilis Surveillance Coordinator for the State Department of Health Services, and Allison Linton, a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology and an associate professor at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. They were with us to discuss the rising number of babies born with congenital syphilis in Wisconsin. It can cause serious health problems without treatment. Syphilis was nearly eliminated in the U.S. about 20 years ago, but infections have soared in recent years. And for disclosure, Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin are a business sponsor of Wisconsin Public Radio.